Very happy to have Patrick Donnelly here tonight, along with his spouse, Stephen Miller. Patrick Donnelly is the author of 4 books of poetry. He is the director of the poetry seminar at the Frost Place, Robert Frost's old homestead in Franconia, New Hampshire, now a center for poetry and the arts. With his spouse, Stephen Miller, Donnelly translates classical Japanese poetry and drama. Donnelly was the 2015-17 Poet Laureate of Northampton, Massachusetts, and I would like to welcome you up here to share your work with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Amanda and Henry. Stephen and I have loved being in Gloucester this week, and my understanding is the Democratic debates are this evening, and so we are performing to just a very few people in the room, but we are speaking via streaming to you at home, and I hope you are at home streaming this.
We have one person watching right now.
Yes, absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, one person.
That'll be increased.
There will be more. So as we go on, the energy is going to build, and more people are going to sign on. So tonight I'm going to read from my newest book, which is called Little Known Operas. And then Stephen and I are going to read some of our Japanese translations from my previous book. The cover image of this book is a red velvet cloak that Franco Zeffirelli designed for the great opera singer Maria Callas to wear. 1964 Paris Opera production of Bellini's Norma. The reason for that will become clear in just a second. Inside the book is built with 2 intertwining sequences of poems. One sequence is in the voice of my own very strange version of Jesus. Something about writing through this persona freed me up to say some things I didn't know that I wanted to say. According to me, Jesus is a gardener, a Sufi, an esoteric Buddhist, an atheist, a Japanophile, a sufferer of ocular migraines, and a fan of Federico Garcia Lorca. One reading MC recently accused me of attempting a wholesale restructuring of Christianity, and maybe that's not exactly wrong. The other sequence is about Maria Callas, 1923 to 1977, who has fascinated me for over 50 years. For my 10th birthday in 1966, I asked for a specific recording of Verdi's Rigoletto with Maria Callas, Tullio Serafin conducting, Giuseppe Di Stefano, and Tito Gobbi. For fans of mid-century opera, this was the dream team, and I think I learned about it from studying the liner notes of my mother's other opera recordings. This request frightened my father very much that I might be gay, and about which he was correct, and fortunately we reconciled around that fact a long time ago. And the funny thing is that they gave me the recording. You're going to hear in these Callas poems that I deliberately confuse her with my own dramatically troubled mother, who first took me to the opera when I was 6 years old. How do we get from Jesus to Callas? Well, Jesus himself mentions Callas, as one does, and then the Callas sequence branches off from there. So I'm going to start with Jesus and then branch off to Callas when he does. Jesus said to me, "Did you mean to draw some moral from your own life? How you found love so late? How though you weren't patient, weren't kind, in pursuit were ruthless, it was given to you anyway? Though that story's not done, not proven, you have some wisdom to share with the loveless now, do you? Something they should or shouldn't do. The gay boy, the raped girl, the libeled widow. Jesus now resting his abraded hand on the book. Go ahead then, speak, promise them something. Jesus said, a program remembers, doesn't it, where you stopped watching the movie, where you clicked off those books before shutting off the light. Other programs remember your searches, your queue, passwords, complaints, the wallpaper you chose, how loud, how bright you preferred things to be, your presence in the streaming firmament. What I want to know is, after you've climbed up the 7-story bardos, louder and brighter than you prefer, I've heard, how long do you think they'll remember your place, hold it open for you, keep it warm? Written on the mirror in steam, Jesus' note read, try to remember who I was before you heard my name. Jesus said, Buddhas of limitless light. A phrase encountered by accident, let's say, on an old scroll or overheard. Afterward, would it be impossible to feel so doubting and blue about people? Never again so stagey, so show me, so heart hurt, even if there are no Buddhas of limitless light? Jesus said, God without concepts. I said, but what about metaphor, simile, analogy, coyotes yipping at the moon in the water? Jesus said, God without concepts. I said, doctors without borders, dismissal without prejudice, bath time without tears. Jesus said, the Rothko Chapel, said, song without words. I said, oh, please, you just broke your own rule. And I said, instead of Rothko's empty black and purple voids, how about Fiat Sein Heiligen in Bavaria? Those creamy ovals, S-curves, rococo, stucco, volutes, shells, floating bows, witty, teasing, elusive architecture, even Robert Venturi, like, look it up. Jesus said, God without, but it was late, and I had already hung anyway up on him. I dreamed that Jesus bid me go and rake the ashes on Mount Golgotha, looking for the poems he lost there. My dear, don't weep, he said. One of them began, a bead like amber hung from pine. So you may, he said, find my virtue glinting in the dust. The rosin of my heart, he said. My dear, he said, my litter of lost rosin. Jesus said, just when I think I've heard everything Callas recorded, I stumble on something new. This Saint-Saëns thing I almost didn't click on because it was, you know, Saint-Saëns, who stormed out of the Rite of Spring 29 May 1913, infuriated over the misuse of the bassoon. Anyhow, 61, Paris, Callas with her musical friend Georges Pret. Too bad they couldn't have married as well. They were good together. It was 3 years after her voice was supposedly gone. She gave to one listener an experience he described on YouTube. Working with my dad in the chip shop, radio on in the background, this was played. I couldn't recognize the singer, but remember saying, "Dad, she has to be one of the greatest in the world." Her voice confused me. But how often do we get a chance to listen as if the first time? His first time, so close to her last time. "You, writing this," Jesus said, "tried to be a singer when you were young. You weren't good enough." But Kalas opened a neural pathway through which the representations run, masks of light and shade. Maybe her voice had almost to be gone before it could prove, with inevitable little slidings from one note to its neighbor or wider, Delilah to Samson, that her confidence was shot, but not her throat. Still changing every note's color, all that has dark sounds, roots thrusting into the fertile loam known to all of us, ignored by all of us, a power and not a behavior, a struggle and not a concept, not even in the throat, but surging up from the soles of the feet, her feet, before which lay paradise. Maria Kalas went to Hamburg. In 1959, when Maria Kalas went to Hamburg, her hair was still neoclassical. In the film, she emerges at 0 minutes, 7 seconds, silk legs the clapper of an underwater bell. But the moment I need to tell about is at 42:30. Prelude of the Pirata aria, when, resting her left hand on the conductor's cage, head down, eyes closed, cloistered, 30 seconds, 40, 50. She doesn't know us. We are nowhere and no one. Descending figure, strings distressed, dissonant, trembling, swelling. Remember Mom in the 60s, her door closed, sometimes till noon? One of the things I was exploring in writing about Kalas was how a person who is so much in the public eye makes a mistake or has a failure, and then how do you go on after that? But as she did, so she had both mistakes or small failures on stage and also off stage in her private life. And for that matter, how does anyone go on after a small or large mistake or a failure, you know, if you don't just quit the scene and you're never seen again, which is not what she did. So this is something that explores an incident in which she had a small artistic failure. Crack up at 14:36. The trouble starts at "Woe to Him, Lady Macbeth" letter scene, who sets uncertain foot and then retreats. On retreats, her mouth starts square, G, A, B, high C, then spreads. The C thins, curdles, acidic. But to me, it's less important that she cracks the high C. Yes, she does. She did. 1959, moment 1436. Then what her face did, her hands. Eyes widen, narrow, widen wider while she tries to save the note. After it splinters, all gone, went wrong so fast, her right hand apologizes, out from the breast, back, saying, "Well, I tried. I practiced for 22 years, for instance. So for a moment, 10 measures, horn, trumpet, trombones, strings. How about we shut our eyes and smile to ourselves? Then, side eye to the conductor, not your fault, moving on. Come on, hurry. I want to burn that cold heart of yours. Long muteness at 46:12. Then, after hiding, Kalas opened her eyes and raised in profile her pointy chin, one of her mad scenes. But where's her voice? I'm just a baby in a mud house in a mountain town, so I can't help much. Maybe Mom will take me to the opera, pull on her black Dior with the plunging back, ask me to sponge Max Factor over her scars, those little white moons. At 44:06, her face had one hope. At 44:16, it flowed out through her eyes. But where's her voice? Her perfume was my sin. Her 50s console full of opera from Dick Aspinwall, sometime afternoon guy who asked, did I want a knuckle sandwich? I know now that when I'm 9, I'll sing soprano, act 1 altar boy in Tosca, trouble in Butterfly, Marie's kid at the end of Wozzeck on his stick horse, hop, 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 and I'll shake Stravinsky's hand. I can't help this either, but Dad might have worried less about queers in the theater and more about the afternoons he was away. At 46:12, I'm still 3, so I won't hear it for another 55 years, when finally, is it day or night, am I alive or buried, she opens her mouth. Kalas versus Jesus. You knew this was coming, right? Jesus includes Kalas, but Kalas has no Jesus in her. It being very Greek of her to ignore him in favor of his mother and to count upon her understanding of why a woman would feel the need to say over the radio, I would not kill my enemies, but I will make them get down on their knees. I will, I can, I must. Goodbye, little table, at 2:15. While we two were together, we only ever needed one glass to drink from, she sang. Rumors that Kalas had a baby named Omero Lengrini. The earth, the dirt, it doesn't refuse any step we might make today, not more than yesterday. The space between atoms isn't more remote, lonely, angry. Because some of these mornings when my foot first touches the ground, I have to cry, Mother, Mother. Envoy, Kalas and my mother say goodbye. 1. After whoever filched her urn from its niche in the columbarium, then sleepy, bored, set it down, I'm making up this part now, on Christmas Day, on the path of the dragon, it was Vaso decided on the Aegean. The sea being the one place where, when you put something, you always know where it is. A windy day, her ashes blew back in their faces, their mouths. 2. Following me, watching, listening, writing this, you can't save me. Out the window, I'll sleepwalk again over the rickety mill race. I'll wake up It's in my music, again on the divan of some man, not your father. And again, I'll cross the Alps on just my exhaled breath. This is the last poem in Little Known Operas. I told Jesus, when I was afraid as a child, I looked for pictures of you in the encyclopedia and circled them around my bed. Jesus said, I remember. Giotto cimabue fra angelico. I remember the bells as Duccio's maestà was carried into the cathedral. I told Jesus I asked you to lift my gayness from me, laid down on my face in front of the altar at All Saints Church on West 4th Street in Detroit. I was 19. It was 1975, midnight, and the tiles were cold. Jesus said, I remember asking you, hath the rain a father? Or who hath begotten the drops of dew? I told Jesus, for 30 years I asked you to send me someone to love. And then Stephen came and we married, but we were old. So I begged you, keep us alive. Let us live a little longer. Jesus said, I remember, I remember, I remember the poem of you that I sent to the Empress with a branch of flowering. So now I'm gonna invite my spouse, Stephen Miller, the Stephen of that poem, up to join me. And he and I are going to read some of our Japanese translations together. He's going to read the Japanese because you do not want to hear me read Japanese. And we're just going to go back and forth. And we'll say a little bit about the poems before we start. So we're going to close by reading a group of Japanese poems that were part of my last book, Nocturnes of the Brothel of Ruin. They were woven into a sequence about my mother's death, and they focus on the Buddhist idea of impermanence.
The poems that Patrick and I translate are Buddhist poems from about 800 to 1,000 years ago.
Between the early 10th century and the 15th century, the Japanese emperors ordered the compilation of 21 anthologies of poetry. These contained anywhere from a few hundred to several thousand poems.
The Japanese originals of these poems, like most poems in the imperial anthologies, are waka, the 31-syllable form that was primary in Japanese poetics for over a millennium. Later, they went on to develop an even shorter form, the haiku, in 17 syllables. But they continued to write waka, which were called tanka later.
Japanese poems from the classical period weren't given any titles, but the compilers of the anthologies gave many poems a short prose preface or headnote called kotobagaki, which described the poem's content or the occasions of their composition. These prefaces are now considered aesthetically inseparable from the poems, and in fact, many of the poems would be very difficult to understand without them, because when they were written, people knew the circumstances of the composition, but later that would have been lost. So what sound like titles to a reader of English poetry were actually added when the poems were anthologized.
Buddhism came to Japan in the 6th century, but because it was felt at first that literary pursuits and Buddhism might be mutually exclusive, it was several hundred years before poems began to be written on Buddhist themes in Japanese.
Once the conceptual barriers were surmounted, the writing of poems, especially Buddhist poems, actually developed into a recognized path to enlightenment. And gradually, Buddhist poems began to be included in the imperial anthologies.
Many people associate Japanese poetry, especially haiku, with Zen Buddhism. But the poems we work on are based on earlier forms of Japanese Buddhism, like Tendai, Shingon, and especially Jodo or Pure Land Buddhism. The focus of the Pure Land teachings was devotion to Amida, a cosmic Buddha who presided over a paradise or a pure land in the West. The goal was to be reborn in this Western paradise, in part by reciting a mantra called the Nembutsu. Many Pure Land poems make use of the fact that the moon rises in the east and travels to the west, where Amida was waiting with longing for the Buddhist practitioner to arrive.
In fact, anytime the moon is mentioned in these poems, it means the Buddha, either the historical Buddha or one of the cosmic Buddhas, or the Buddhist teachings. And if the moon is covered by clouds, that means a time of testing and hardship for the Buddhist practitioner. So the first poem we're going to read does not have a preface, and it may be the strangest and most beautiful of the poems that Stephen and I have translated together.
From the Japanese of Gyoki, Momokusa ni yasokusa soete tamaiteshi, chibusa no mukui kyozo wagasuru.
The debt I owe the breasts my mother in tender mercy gave. To 100 stones add 80, I repay today.
The next is another poem without a preface. From the Japanese of former preceptor Keisen, Tsune yuri mo kyō no kasumi no aware naru, takigi tsuki nishi keburi to omoeba.
It hurts that what I mistook for today's spring mist is just the smoke of wood that has been consumed by the fire.
And the smoke, of course, would have been the cremation fires. From the Japanese of Gon no Sōjō Yōen, on the essence of the welling up from the earth chapter. Tarachine wa kuro kami nagara ikanareba, kono mayu shioki hito to naru danu.
The mother's hair is black, but the child's eyebrows have turned white. How is it possible?
From the Japanese of Gyosei, the Tenryaku Emperor. When the emperor's plans for a celebration in his mother's honor were cut short by her death. Itsushikato kimi ni to omuishi wakana oba, nori no michi nizo kyō wa tsumitsuru.
The tender shoots of spring I picked today, I wanted to hurry them to you for your journey. Here is a zōtōka, which is a pair of poems from a poetic conversation 1,000 years ago. So one poem would have been sent to another person, and then that person would have replied to a poem. And the imperial anthologies preserve many poetic conversations like this.
From the Japanese of priest Keihan, sent to Ise no Tayu on the 15th of the second month in the middle of the night. Ika nareba kayoi no tsuki no sayonaka ni terashi mo hate de irishi naru dan.
Why, instead of shining to the end, did the moon of evening go inside the veil during the night's small hours?
An answer. Yo terasu tsuki kakure nishi sayonaka wa aware yame ni wa minamado iken.
During the night's small hours, the moon that shone over the world has hidden. Will everyone have been lost in the dark? I love the fact that she answers his question with another question.
From an anonymous Japanese poem. On the surprising appearance of a strange priest in the author's dream during a time of arduous practice. Asagoto ni hara o chiridani aru mono o ima iku yo tote tayumu naru ran.
Though every morning the same dust of suffering must be swept away, I ask myself, how many lives do you expect that you might loiter through this one?
From the Japanese of Chinkai Hoshi no Haha, on seeing the blossoms fall at a ceremony honoring the Buddha's relics at Daigo. Kyō mo nao, oshimi yasemashi nori no dame, chirasu hanazo to omui nasazu wa.
Were I not quite certain flowers are scattered for the sake of the law, today I'd regret them yet again. Wouldn't I?
From the Japanese of Fujiwara Takamitsu, written on a folded piece of paper during a snowfall as the author was about to enter the priesthood. Yononaka ni furuzu hakanaki shirayuki no katsu wa kienuru mono to shiru shiru.
My days in the world are vanishing. We know about snow, falls, white, disappears. The next poem compares the human body to a banana tree. And I think what the poet was trying to get at is that the stems of the banana are hollow and break very easily. Even more interestingly, the poem contains the words leaves of grass, kusanoha, 900 years before Walt Whitman.
From the Japanese of former major counselor Kinto, on the metaphor, this body is like a banana tree. Kaze fukeba mazu yabure nuru kusa no ha ni yoso uru kara ni sore zo tsuyukeki.
Leaves of grass that break at the first gust. No sooner do I make that likening than my sleeves are wet with tears. And our last translation, our last poem tonight.
From the Japanese of Koben, on the metaphor, this body is like a moon in the water. Tsune naranu wagami wa mizu no tsuki nareba yoni sumi togen koto mo omowazu.
To live in the world, I don't expect that to last because my body is a mortal moon of water. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.